Chapter 33. The despair of having the father of her sons turn her in as a murderer equaled the despair Linda felt over killing her mother. She hadn't planned to kill her mother. It just happened. Howard had turned her in on purpose. He told the police to wire his office, and he'd get her to confess while they were having a general conversation over the reopening of their settlement agreement. Linda had even felt she made some headway with him because he seemed so genuinely pleased that she had some job interviews that might turn out okay for her. But now, after everything had come out in the wash, she knew he'd been baiting her to implicate herself while their conversation was being recorded. Her friends in Cabot never questioned her innocence or guilt. Around bridge tables, the conversations were 100% in favor of Linda. "It's just a gut feeling I have," said one hostess of the month as she dealt the cards. The lady who brought the lemon bars for dessert agreed. And the hostess's husband, who watched a Cardinals game on TV in the den, yelled out his agreement, which caused the ladies to lower their voices and wonder what else he had heard. But what none of her friends could understand was why Linda would let Howard tell her which lawyer to hire. Her friends didn't know what it was like to be cowed like a dog that has been beaten by his master. If she'd had a tail, Linda would have tucked it under her and sulked under a porch. Gilla refused to believe Linda was guilty. She often said, "If anyone killed that woman, it was Howard." She had no respect for Howard or his mother, and it was her misfortune to have known them long before she'd known Linda. When Linda and Howard lived in North Little Rock, his mother had told Gilla that she couldn't be friends with both Linda and her. "You know what I said to that bitch, don't you?" The younger children were still with Linda, and they played with their matchbox cars and Garfield toys. She saw the older boys fairly often. The oldest was 14, and he seemed distant to his mom and three brothers. "I don't want to have to hang out with my brothers, Mom. I want to be with my friends, or just be left alone." Linda didn't know if he was exhibiting typical teenage angst or if it was something else. During one late-night discussion, he cried. "You don't understand, Mom. I saw them carry you out of the police car." Linda tried to embrace him. "I'm sorry your dad made you see that. He shouldn't have done that." "Well, maybe, Mom, you shouldn't have done what you did." She worried about what would happen to her boys. She didn't have much of the $50,000 left after her mother's and brother's estates were settled, including the sale of the White Palace. And she had to pay Engstrom for representing her so far. He told her he'd try to work out a deal, but if they had to go to trial, his fee would just about wipe out what she had left. The money, though, was frozen until the outcome of the trial. Her friends loaned her money, knowing they might never get it back. That summer of 1984 was one of the hottest on record. Most people who could stayed indoors with their air conditioners on full blast. They sat in front of their television sets watching Cheers and Dynasty. Women got their chores done in the morning, and the evening meal prepared before the kitchen got too hot to have the oven on. At Howard's house, the azaleas Linda had lovingly planted died from lack of water. So did the dogwood in the front yard. Football season arrived, bringing people out of their summer hibernation. The residents of Cabot and Van Buren and those of just about every other town in Arkansas cheered for their teams. Friday night football was the cheapest and most attended spectator event throughout the state. People paid $2 or $3 to get in, 50 cents for a Coke, a quarter for a baby Ruth. Parents shelled out money so their daughters could buy cheerleading skirts and sweaters, drill team uniforms, and pep club outfits. The boys either played football or marched in the band, and everyone came to watch their kids or their neighbors' kids. Everyone came out the winner. The school profited and bought new band uniforms and new football gear. Higher salaries were offered to seemingly better coaches who had won more games, who in turn demanded bigger and better stadiums equipped with weight rooms and press boxes, like those winning teams they'd read about in Sports Illustrated. And in the stands, the men watched the game, The women gossiped about Linda Martin. And in bed later that night, the husbands asked their wives what they had heard.